Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 22nd day of January.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists for Commodity Week today include Dan Bossi. He's the Executive Vice President of Ag Resource out of Chicago, Illinois. Along with us is Kurt Kimmel, too, from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He serves as their Senior Grains Analyst. Chip Nellinger is with us from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. And Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities. He hails from Hudsonville, Illinois. Let's start with a list from each of you of some items you'd like to discuss today. Kurt Kimmel.
Well, there are quite a few things going on. I guess the main thing this week is world currency values fluctuating quite a bit. And maybe we can ask Dan a little bit later on whether this is going to be a major concern for the grain market as we move forward. Then secondly, you know, the South America continues to be in the headline news also.
Chip Dellinger?
Well, I would second that, but a little deeper, not only with the dollar and currency fluctuations, you know, the big break in crude oil prices that we've seen. I guess the biggest immediate concern I have is how is that going to affect ethanol prices long term? And then, you know, it seems like the next thing that's going to hit this grain market to really kind of impact us is the planting equation and, you know, maybe how that's shaping up into spring with relatively low commodity prices.
Sherman Newland.
Yeah, I would go along with all of that. You know, we're watching the crude oil market quite a bit, so I'm kind of curious on where everybody thinks it might end up going and in what the acreage mix and where the corn acres might land here this spring.
And did they leave anything for you to talk about, Dan Bossi, as an item list?
Well, I would talk about deflation, and I don't mean deflation in what Mr. Belichick of the Patriots is talking about. I'm talking about more about what would happen in terms of the global economy. We have all the signs of falling energy prices and overcapacity in manufacturing on a global basis, and what does that really mean for commodities over the next several years?
Okay, so let's start with you. What does that mean for the commodities over the next several years? I think farmers will want to know longer term what their options are, especially given the deadlines that are coming up for the new government programs. Those are at the end of February and the end of March, respectively. But they're going to be signing up for some programs, and it makes a difference as to how high or low the price of corn, soybeans, wheat, oats, rice, all those commodities that are paid might be, and what those government programs can do over 5 years. Can you help us out in that process?
We believe in something in our office called the plateau theory. If we look back to the Civil War, we can see corn prices trading in a plateau, a range that goes over long periods of time. And every once in a while, whether it's World War I or the Reconstruction effort after World War II or the Russian grain robbery in the early 70s, we get these jolts to the upside, and then we get a period of readjustment. We believe ethanol, of course, the build-out of the biofuel factories was that catalyst in the last 6 or 7 years. We think we're now into a period of readjustment, and that readjustment is going to last some period of time. In other words, we don't see U.S. corn demand vacillating much from, 13.5 billion bushels, and we have to fight for export demand around the world. Where deflation comes into all of this would be a rally in what we call king dollar. And we're talking about the U.S. dollar and maybe to some degree the U.S. stock market. It means that people leave the commodity sector. We have overcapacity in production, whether it's copper or crude oil, or even for that matter, some of the grain markets. And we're back to where we are meeting world caloric intake, which is about 1.8%. And we can do that with trend line yields. We really don't need any additional acres. So this shifts the price cues downwards. And to put it in maybe a nutshell, we think corn trades in a broad range of, something like $2.75 to $4.50. Soybeans, maybe it's something like $6.50 or $7 on the downside to an upside of $10.50 or $11. And on wheat, we see it somewhere around $4.25 to $4.50 up to around $7. And so I want farmers to be focusing on rallies when we get them to be making forward sales, because unless you have a weather problem, we continue to add to the bottom line of these markets. And world stocks of corn, soybeans, and wheat stacked on top of itself right now is a record high. So the world kind of has a wet blanket on it, and the rallying dollar is not helping us.
And can you repeat for me the soybean range again? What did you say it would
be? We think our models would suggest somewhere as low as $6.50 to $7 if U.S. weather this year was favorable. We can't keep producing back-to-back record crops in each hemisphere. And on the upside, we think $10.50 to $11 is pretty much as high as we can go. The main problem we have is farmers planted lots of corn in prior years. We're now seeing that shift to oilseeds, and so somehow the market has to change that, and we're already seeing that in terms of the corn-soybean ratio, which is now down to 2.3 to 1. We think that may have downside potential as we move into the spring planting period of 2 to 1 or 2.1 to 1. In other words, somehow the market needs to make soybeans a less profitable crop than they are today.
Dan, your ranges are unfortunate for those who have to make the decisions, landowners and farmers, both for the ARC and PLC decisions, because they include payments from both sides. The break point for corn, national cash price, that's the WASD figure that's due out in September, the last one of the year for the marketing year. For ARC County to pay out more often than PLC is $3.30 for corn. It's $7.80 for soybeans. So the question you have to ask yourself as a landowner or a farmer over the next 5 years is whether or not corn will be above or below $3.30 and soybeans above or below $7.80. And your ranges happen to wrap around both of those. Can you give us any more indication in the plateau theory you're talking about up front, or you're more likely to be at this point, I guess, because the upfront part already has happened. At this point, are we more likely over the five-year period to be above or below those kinds of levels, do you suppose?
I think those averages you pointed out, Todd, are not too close from reality, and it does make the decision process very difficult. And all we can interject is that every 6 or 8 years, the Midwest seems to have a drought and provide some stimulus for the marketplace. If one signs up for the ARC and he gets the bigger payments up front, is there a chance of a drought that could offer us to market crops above those levels in future years? And so that's a little bit of what we're thinking here. But, you know, it's always been strange to me over time, whether it's the loan programs going back to the, you know, 1980s and 1990s or whatever, markets tend to gravitate to where the government offers support. And unfortunately, that support does not mean farmers are profitable today, but we would expect that over time, the costs of producing corn and soybeans decline. How that really entails itself, whether it's land rents or land values or seed costs or fertilizer, diesel's already down, as we well understand. But somehow those costs have to adjust along with the marketplace to make this whole game work. And I think that's the debate we're having in our office right now, how that happens and where does it happen first and who benefits and who loses from the whole situation.
Hey, Sherman, I know you've been looking at this. What do you think of the longer term? And maybe each of you have probably been asked more than once about the ARC and PLC decision, and I don't want to get bogged down in it for very long. And it's very difficult to make recommendations, I know. The university has some thoughts on the process, and you've heard some of those because I've been out and about with them. The 330, the 780 are some of the theories, actually the real work that goes behind that. But each of you, and maybe Sherman, what are you thinking about this as a farmer? How do you view those programs, and what are you thinking about your choices in the next couple of months?
Well, personally, I mean, it looks to me like everything I've read and every farmer I've talked to and people at the FSA office, and that the ARC County is probably going to be the best way to go. And that's probably how I'm going to be going on my farm. I mean, we're in that process right now of getting through all this paperwork and getting this done. I mean, the other is updating your yields and then updating your base acres. So it's quite the process. And a lot of, I mean, from a farmer's standpoint, a lot of them aren't real excited about any of it, but know it's a necessary evil to try and get through it. And they're, you know, getting it done. I guess one thing I would like to say is, you know, don't drag your feet on it, because a lot of this you have to have done by the end of February.
Yeah, you need to make the allocation of base acres and the update of yields by February 27th. Right. By the end of March, you make the ARC and PLC decision. Don't make that too early because the county yields come out in February, and they have a big impact on what our county actually can pay out. Some farmers will ask whether they need to update the yields because if they're going to go our county, that doesn't have an impact. You don't need them. What the university folks say about that one is, when was the last time you updated? And when's the next time, more importantly, you'll get the opportunity to update? Because that doesn't happen very often. There are yields out there that are, what, 1972 or something like that. So you need to update them. And that's possible to do, by the way, and you probably know this because you deal with crop insurance, Sherman. And you'll be getting asked a lot as well, I suspect, that the APHs do count.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. So if those are going to be quite a bit higher than what they used to be, I mean, you definitely want to try and get your, like you said, your yields updated because you don't know when you're going to get another chance to do that. So.
Right. And then, Chip Nellinger, what do you know about the programs? What have you learned? What are farmers asking you?
Well, I think the same thing that you hit on. One thing, and this doesn't certainly fit every producer out there, but there are the income caps out there. So if you're to the point or have a large enough acreage base that you're going to hit the income cap, you know, one way around that question or to diversify yourself a little bit is, and obviously if you're in multiple counties, do a little of each, and that way that diversifies you a little bit. Again, this isn't the whole segment of farming operations, I realize, but, you know, those people out there that are listening and kind of wondering, you know, which program do I take? You know, consider taking both, especially if you're in multiple counties and you're going to hit that cap anyway. It gives you a little bit of a diversification and kind of spreads you out a little bit from having to be all or none with those programs.
And it might be important to note that this set of programs is by commodity. It's on an FSA farm number, but it's by commodity, and it pays off base acres, so that's why you're going to reallocate. Allocation, according to Gary Schnitke, Jonathan Kappas, Daryl Good, the ag economist at the University of Illinois, in the primary Corn Belt growing regions of the nation should be corn first, wheat, and then soybeans minimized over the time. Kurt, I know you've been listening to the whole thing. Do you have anything to add on this, or do you have a question that you'd like to ask Dan Bossy at the moment?
There's just too many moving parts anymore. Gosh, it takes a college professor to explain it. That's a little steep there. But yeah, back to Dan here. I talked about the world currency values. With the stronger dollar, Dan, do you feel that's going to affect bean sales to China as we move down the road?
You know, I don't, Kurt. One of the reasons I say that is the Chinese yuan or renminbi has been relatively stable. I think if the Chinese currency started to weaken relative to the U.S. dollar like everyone else, that would indeed pose a problem for U.S. Soy sales. But at the moment, we're seeing some Chinese buyers having trouble in terms of opening LCs. That's because the government is trying to clamp down to some degree on the speculative trade. Let's say somebody imports 5 million tons of beans, but they only have crush for one. So the Chinese government is frowning upon that and trying to somehow diminish that. But aside from that, our big concern on the currency is just what I would suggest is a competitive advantage that every world farmer has relative to us United States producers or citizens. I mean, I talk to my clients in Russia. As soon as I talk about wheat prices and tell them what's going on in the world, they quickly shift the discussion over to what car should I buy? Should I buy the Audi or Mercedes? And the reason they're saying that is because wheat prices in ruble terms in Russia are at record highs. They are never looking at making so much money. And although Russia may have to buy a little seed, if you will, and there's some additional cost of that, they produce their own fertilizer. They of course, have some chemicals that they can use there. So the Russian farmer, the Brazilian farmer, the Canadian farmer, everybody is really relatively happy because of this big rally in the dollar. And it just pushed us at a non-competitive position going forward. So if you do have large grain stocks and another favorable growing season, the onus really falls on the U.S. farmer to cut. He ends up being the residual supplier of grains going forward, and that's not a position we want to be in.
It may not be a position we want to be in, Sherman, but according to some of the numbers that have been coming out from Informa, it appears that farmers across the Midwest are responding. If Informa is correct, and 88 million acres, will they need to be cutting more out of their acreage? And do you think that's right?
Yeah, I can see that happening. I mean, we could see some situations where it could be even be below 88 million, and you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, I think one theory we were kind of looking at is, what does the price of corn do between now and then? I mean, if we continue to stutter around here or go lower, or if prices of beans would continue to go lower, that may actually not let the corn acres go down as much. But, I mean, we could see a situation where they can drop into the 86 million acre area, so to speak, and maybe that happens. I mean, we can still do that, you know, make those decisions as we get towards spring, but it could definitely take place.
Do the rest of the acres get planted as soybeans? They're certainly not going into wheat, because that's kind of a done deal at this time.
Well, that's true. I think there are a lot of guys that are talking about doing that, and I think more so it's going to be more on your fringe areas than here in Illinois, so to speak, than anything. So I think we could see a high bean acreage number. I mean, I think that 88 is definitely a doable situation.
Chip, your thought on acreage spread?
Yeah, I agree with that. I've been to a couple different meetings in different parts of the country, talked to some producers in the South. They are going, one producer in particular, planted 6,000 acres of corn last year, not putting a kernel in the ground this year. That, I think, is a common theme across the South. And I think the far north, particularly North Dakota, you could really pare back the corn acreage. So yeah, I agree. I think the corn acreage, and that's confirmed by talking to different seed salesmen across the Corn Belt as well, that, you know, bean sales up, corn sales down, there's still time to shift that. But boy, you know, you get much past February and those decisions are kind of made. Inputs have just not come down for corn. So I'm in agreement. If we stay down here very much longer, I think you could lose quite a few acres of corn. Could give us some opportunities down the road, but like Dan mentioned, we still have a rising stocks environment in corn and beans both, and that's going to really hang over us like a wet paper towel, I guess, for quite some time.
Kurt, do you agree with all that's been said so far? Is this laying out kind of a bearish scenario that you think will unfold over time?
Well, I think it's for beans, it probably is. For corn, you know, if we come in at the lower end expectations for acreage, you know, it's definitely going to tighten the supply-demand balance sheet up some more. But one thing, too, we got to remember here in the central part of the Midwest, guys like to plant corn. And, you know, if the weather's going to be favorable this spring, you know, they'll plant a little bit more corn as a whole. But it's definitely a warning signal for beans, and that's sets the stage here to test that $6.57 level in beans that Dan mentioned earlier.
Wow. I don't know. These seems like really low prices to me. Where did this come from in the last week or so? Because we haven't talked about those kind of low prices. So something must be changing in the marketplace. What is it?
You know, I would offer, we got past the January report and we didn't really see a big change in the FSA data. And so when you didn't have that acreage set, which on corn and soybeans combined fell much under 74 million acres, and we then found out we had 2 million acres that didn't go to winter wheat, a lot of that in the Midwest SRW country, if you will, in Northern Delta, that meant that those acres could go over to additional beans or corn. And so when you add it all up together, it's conceivable this year that the U.S. could plant somewhere between 75.5 and 77 million acres of corn and beans. And unfortunately, that's just more than we need. I would want to be really bearish on corn here. I'm not. I think corn is kind of a range-bound market. But if I'm a producer and I see December 15 corn getting above 425, I surely would like to be rewarding that rally, because I'm not sure we can go a lot higher unless you give me a yield threat. And soybeans, as we discussed, whether it's 86 or 88 doesn't make a lot of difference, because we've just got too much of this stuff, and the market needs to send a signal somehow to change that rotation going forward.
Yes, but it hasn't sent the signal yet, right?
It hasn't yet, Todd, but there's been a great debate within the industry in terms of what will we ship on old crop position. I see some export numbers as large as you know, 1885, and I see some of them, like ourselves, which are at 1770. And so it's that additional 100 million bushels of beans which makes the difference. And as China started to cancel some cargoes this week, people started to rear back on that higher export estimate, and that started to change the dynamics in the market. And so I think it's that combination of FSA and China just not showing its aggressive nature. And we also have Brazil offering soybeans well below the United States from March, May, April, you know, March, May forward. And that's got to be a concern for U.S. sales during that time frame.
Yeah, this year, the difference between FSA numbers and USA numbers, USDA numbers in total for corn and soybeans was, what, 9.3 million acres, I think, or something. But it's been widening out for some time. This, according to Daryl Good on his blog post, Farm Doc Daily, from last Monday. And he made note of that. But USDA hasn't explained why the FSA numbers, the other, you know, NAS collects numbers and FSA, both USDA numbers, they haven't explained why those are widening out and why they have happened to widen out over the years. FSA numbers don't count everything. I guess NAS may or may not get it right either. I don't know. I didn't mean to be quite so ardent about it, but things are changing in this marketplace, at least underneath it, very, very quickly. I mean, the market's dropped, but you guys are far lower than, at least some of you are far lower than the market is at this point, and you kind of surprised me in that process. And I think you probably have surprised maybe a few of the listeners as well. And now they're reconsidering all kinds of things would be my guess. So maybe you all have some recommendations for them. I think I want to start with Sherman because you have the option where you were. Did you get wheat acres in last fall?
It varied on where you're at. Most of the areas around here did not. Now, the fellas that plant wheat on sand, they got their wheat acres in. But in southern Illinois and around here, no, we were just too wet. There were just not a lot of wheat acres put in. And some that were put in, the wheat's not hardly even up yet. So
yeah, Illinois wheat acres down 200,000 from 750,000 to 550,000 soft red. So it was off. Really dramatically for the year. They'll go into soybean?
I hear from talking to producers and seed salesmen, maybe more 50-50 split on that, whether it's going to go to corn or beans, both, either one. So that's kind of where I'm at.
And which do you think they still have the choice, probably, because there were two reasons that it didn't go in, I think. One, of it was late. And they were wet.
Right.
And the other was, I didn't learn until I was in southern Illinois, vomitoxin is such a problem that there was a huge basis, apparently. And there's still a lot of elevators filled with problem soft red, and bins filled with problem soft red winter wheat in southern Illinois.
That's correct.
So those are the two reasons that wheat didn't go in. They likely still have the choice in those areas, and I would think a lot of Illinois, southern Indiana, parts of Missouri are all in that. They can go to beans or corn. Which one do you think they ought to do?
It depends on what type of soil. I mean, usually if you go into corn, you're going to go where you had bean stubble. And if you were going to put wheat on corn stalks, you're probably going to go back to that area with beans. So that's how I would look at it from a producer standpoint on which, where it was going to go.
But that's based on rotation and,
yes.
and not a change other than they didn't put wheat in.
Right. Right. But, you know, as far as bean prices go, I mean, I'm not quite to that $6 area at all yet as far as the low side of it. I mean, we've got a lot of weather ahead of us this coming summer, so I would expect, you know, we'd have some sort of chances to sell still at a higher price than where we are now. You know, and we had an awfully good year last year. I mean, are we expected to have that kind of high yield environment again this year? I'm not saying I wouldn't rule it out. You know, it's kind of hard to see. I mean, I think that's why corn is kind of staying up there so much where it's at, still keeping a little bit of premium in there. And there is some dry areas throughout the country if you look at the drought index. So that could still rear its head yet. So, I mean, I'm not saying that with good weather and these high acres on the beans that we can't probe into those lower areas, but it seems like every time we do, you know, we've talked about big carryouts in the past in the beans, but lo and behold, somehow they seem to get used up or sucked up from somewhere.
And once in a while, I get carried into these conversations, and when I listen back to the programs, I think, oh my gosh, that was more bearish than what the analyst I think wanted it to be. So maybe I better go back and poll each of you to see where we really think we are on soybeans. Sherman already told us. Kurt Kimmel, how about you for soybeans over this coming marketing year?
Well, I
Sherm said, it's going to depend a lot on weather. You know, there's still some moving parts, but I look at it as short term, between now and sometime this summer. I think Novi beans, upside's probably going to be capped at 10, 10.25, and we could probably drift on down to this 8, 8.5 level.
Maybe I should check in with Chip too.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that going back to your original question, I don't know if I'm $6 bearish, but I guess the way I look at it, the sands are shifting a little bit. And the one thing that maybe has changed, like Dan said, over the last, say, 3 or 4 weeks, number one, we've got the USDA January report out of the way, so we know where we're at. Number two, we just really never developed into a major weather problem in Brazil. There's a couple dry spots, but overall, they have a big crop coming. And so as you look, crunch that through, the carryouts are just exploding worldwide. And you cap that with the fact that we're likely to plant more acres here. Me, as I look at the risk involved, I see way more downside risk immediately and longer term in the bean market than corn. So, you know, back to your original question here, what can producers do? If I'm a producer and standing in their shoes, I'm going to be much more defensive on beans, even from this level, and maybe even out a couple of years. If I'm wrong on that and early and beans go higher, it only means corn can go higher as well from an acreage standpoint over the next 3 months. So I'm taking the standpoint from being much more defensive in the beans, and probably don't need to be quite as defensive in the corn just yet till we get to planting and see how the weather's going to be to put the crop in the ground and how many acres we're going to lose. But I think it is a shifting type of a foundation we've got here, and we're used to the last 5 or 6 years psychologically of shrinking stocks. It's gone way the other direction in the bean market quickly.
And I probably, Dan, should have you recap your thought process here and where you stand again on the soybeans for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be the motivational speaker today, but you know, our vision here at Ag Resource, we take the vision of, first of all, that weather is normal, because I don't know what else to do at this time of the year. We know WASDE in their February report will be using a bean yield, because we've got the baseline already at around 45.9 or 46 bushels an acre. We know on corn it's 167. Using that kind of yield, because that's what we'll see all the way up through about the June report, we have too much stocks, and unfortunately this is going to cap rallies in both. I agree at 10.25 being the high in November beans, at least on some kind of seasonal rally. On corn, we're thinking somewhere between 4.25, 4.40 in December 15. And if weather is normal and we have good crops for the second year in a row, we think this market extracts more premium than it has in the other years, because we're in the stock building phase. So our downside targets in Dees corn would be somewhere between 3 to 3.40. Our downside targets in beans range from, as I said before, 6.50 to 7.50. And on wheat, if you want to be bullish a market, we think the wheat market is not that far from a bottom. In July Chicago, we don't see much downside risk below 5.20, so it's only carrying 20 cents today. So if you wanted to be long something, we favor being long wheat against the summer row crops, at least at the moment.
I want to plumb the soybean market for just a bit more on the fundamental side. Dan, can you lay out what world supply looks like, U.S., South America, and potentially what demand is like, and how maybe carryout has changed over time, what's a comfortable carryout on the world front, and if that's really a bellwether we need to watch as opposed to the U.S. carryout. And I know we need to watch the U.S. carryout, but we export an incredible amount of our soybean crop.
We do, and when you look at world demand and you plot it in terms of trade, it's really been due to one country, which is China. If I look at the rest of the world outside of China, we don't have any real growth in demand. In fact, in the last couple of years, it's gone the other way. And so everything is pretty much pointing at China, and the question we have is, does China remain such an acute price buyer on breaks? This is going to be the second year in a row that China sees reduced feed demand from the year prior. We believe their hog herd is at a six-year low, and they've had some real difficulties in some of their livestock sector, including poultry. So we have some questions on Chinese demand, though we're going to stay with USDA's 74 million metric ton total import figure. Brazil this year looks to produce a crop of at least 94 million metric tons. Our team on the ground sees the crop somewhere between 95 and 97 with normal weather going forward. Add to that an Argentinian crop of of somewhere between 56 and 59. We have a record large South American bean production that will exceed 4 billion bushels. And when I add on top of what the U.S. has for stocks, we end up with global soybean stocks. And again, I forgive me, 90 million metric tons, but it's 90.3. If we don't get the farmer somehow to change his mix of acres going forward, we end up next year with global soybean stocks in excess of 112 million metric tons and U.S. soybean stocks over 700 million bushels, which if we model gives us that lower $7 number, and there's always that chance you could exceed it. So that is the problem. It's a supply bear market, a little bit like crude oil. We don't know who's going to blink first and who's going to cut back. We fear that because of the Brazilian real, that Brazilian farmers are not the one to do it.
Hey, I got a different question. And I'm on thin ice here because I just don't deal with livestock very well. Is China, are they in a classic livestock cycle of some sort, and where are they in the cycle?
You know, there is a cycle in Chinese pork, but the problem is government intervention through their support programs always kind of messes it up, Todd. And so we believe that that cycle will bottom sometime in 2016. And then the Chinese, because of a smaller herd, could actually be a larger importer of U.S. pork. But heretofore, I mean, you got meal prices in China at their lowest price going back to 2010. Their hog market's been sliding. And what we see is a little bit surprising to us is total meat consumption per capita in China is not rapidly growing anymore. In other words, the last two or three years have kind of plateaued out. And so whether it's the economy in China, whether it's the pure price of those meats, whether it's concerns over safety, we're not quite certain, but we're not seeing the strong growth in per capita demand coming from China, which is kind of a concern for the entire agricultural outlook. We hope it's wrong, but that's what we're seeing at least at the moment.
I see. So right now we've got ethanol, which is a mature market in the United States, so we plateaued it. Soybean exports to China, which is based on red meat consumption there, appears to be at a point where it's plateauing. Is that what you're telling me, correct?
Plateauing or slowing in its growth phase. I wouldn't want to say it's declining any year, but we're just slowing the demand. Yeah.
Right. So everything is slowed down. It's pretty clear the go-go years, which is a term that Paul Cooley would have used, has come to an end. Now we have to concentrate on how to deal with the new plateau and what's new normal, I suppose.
Well, agriculture has always been a cyclic business. You and I have been in this a long time, and we've seen both sides. And unfortunately, we're on the wrong side of this market, at least for a few years here. And we need to build demand, and we only do that through lower prices, Todd.
One thing, too, is the bulls going to start talking about, relates to this South American crop and currency value, Argentine farmers hoarding the crop. To try to stimulate some upward price movement. But with the large production we're going to see there this crop year, is that really going to be a bullish factor or not?
And do you think it will or will not?
I think the crop's going to be large enough that they're going to have to hold quite a bit to get the speculative crowd to buy on that.
My answer would be that we have a presidential election which will occur in late October, November. Ms. Kirchner will no longer be there. So there's a real possibility that the peso, the blue peso, the one that we call the black market, should narrow relative to the public peso. And so if that happens, the incentive for those Argentinian farmers to hold that 30 million metric tons of beans will quickly evaporate. So that's what we're watching very carefully, and who will be the front runners and how that election will all play out as we head into the fall.
They don't have the incentive. Will they dump it into the marketplace at that point, do you think?
Well, I think, Todd, a lot of Argentinian farmers, as we talk to our clients, are holding them because of their concern about being paid at a cheaper peso tomorrow than what may be today. And so if somehow we start to see stability in the peso and we start to see that blue market start to extract premium, you will see the farmer down there start to let go. So when we look at total South American supplies, as the USDA outlines them, I mean, they're a record by about twofold. We can't imagine both Brazilian and Argentinian farmers having that many silo bags stacked end to end.
What's your final thought on today's program and maybe best thoughts for farmers and what their consideration should be at this point? And I think I'll start, Chip Nellinger, with you.
Yeah, I think that the take home that we probably need to think about and kind of get our minds around is we have shifted from 5 or 6 years of shrinking stocks and increasing demand to now building stocks and lower demand. And that's a different mindset. And that's a mindset not from hold through the breaks because rallies will come. Now it's sell the rallies because lower lows are coming. So I think that's a mindset shift. And not that we won't get opportunities to rally on weather scares or, you know, production flare-ups here and there, but we have to be much more defensive. And if you're going to be defensive on anything, be defensive on the beans at this stage, just because the sheer bearishness of those increasing world supplies.
Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities?
Yeah, I'd go along with several of those things that Chip was saying. I mean, you know, we're going to have to watch, you know, how high this dollar can go and where this crude oil is going to, you know, try and bottom out at one of these days. I mean, nobody can pick where that's going to be. I mean, that's going to probably be, you know, hold some influence on these commodities too. But it does look like to us, without some sort of weather scare, which you're not going to get till later on into the spring or summer, that, you know, rallies are going to probably need to be sold, meant to be sold. And there again, more so in the beans because they do seem to be the most bearish thing out there. So, you know, we really want to try and, you know, protect ourselves on those in case, you know, it does go down to that $6 or $7 area, which you can't rule any of those situations out by any means. So, you know, we don't want to let that happen. So, you know, do something, protect yourself, and then we'll just kind of see where the acres fall and how that plays out. But it does look like we have to try and sell some rallies here.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities?
Fundamentally, you look at the bean complex, you can take away acreage, you can do a lot of things, but that supply-demand balance sheet just continues to grow. How big, we're fixing to find out. But for risk management, even speculative side, we feel, you know, the risks to the downside, we've put hedges in to the beans, feeling that there's more bang for your dollar there. You know, corn, it could drop 50 cents, but beans is going to drop a buck, buck and a half, you know, if this crop comes through. So trying to make some extra cash to pay bills a year from now, I think, would be warranted to hedge or try the short side of the bean complex. Then on the pork side there, that cyclical demand side in Asia and everything, 2016 may be a low, but as we mentioned before, Todd, the great pork robbery 2013 kicks in about 2017-2018.
All right, that's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities. We'll wrap up with Dan Bossi up at Ag Resource. Dan, by the way, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Thursday of next week at the Castle Bank function there in DeKalb. It is at the Center for Agriculture, right, which is the Illinois Farm Bureau building. So I'm really looking forward to being there with you and hearing what you have to say as a final wrap-up, too.
Well, and I with you, Todd. I can't say much more than what Kurt, Chip, and Sherman have said. I would agree with all their comments. We here at Ag Resource like selling rallies, and then we wake up every morning to make sure there's not a weather problem in front of us. And if there's not, we kind of go back to sleep. So I think that's a good marketing strategy. And again, I would even point people out to looking at 2016 crops, because we think, as you think, the Dease corn at 420 or soybeans above 9.5, that those are still some opportunities. So don't be bashful or shy in even making some initial 2016 sales just to have something on the books.
We thank our panelists today, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Dan Bossi of AgriSource Company, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities, and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website at willag.org. You'll find all kinds of information there, including our ag calendar. And right now, our all-day ag outlook information is posted to the front page. Find out all the details about the March 10th event. If you'd like tickets, you can call 217-333-7300, regular hours on the business day, Monday through Friday, Central Time, 8:30 to 4:30. 217-333-7300 for your tickets to our all-day Ag Outlook.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.